Welcome to the Deep Dive, the show where we take a stack of sources, articles, and research and distill them down to the most important, mind-blowing nuggets of knowledge for you. Today, we're embarking on a journey into the surprising world of an herb that probably sits quietly in your kitchen cabinet right now. You might know it as that fragrant sprig you add to a roasted chicken, or maybe the comforting scent of a hearty stew on a cold evening. But what if I told you that this humble, everyday herb, thyme, is actually hiding profound scientific secrets? Secrets that could fundamentally redefine our understanding of health, aging, and even disease at a cellular level. We're talking about diving into cutting-edge science that reveals thyme's potential far, far beyond its traditional culinary uses. It's a remarkable story, and I'm genuinely excited to explore it with you.
And that's exactly where we're headed. Our deep dive today focuses on Thymus vulgaris, you know, common garden thyme. While its long-established traditional uses, things like alleviating respiratory issues, settling gastrointestinal ailments, or even just acting as a natural food preservative, are undoubtedly valuable. What we're going to unpack are the truly groundbreaking insights emerging from the most recent scientific evidence. The core of thyme's therapeutic power actually lies in its essential oil, often referred to as TEO, and a rich profile of specific bioactive constituents. Think of them as the molecular heavy hitters, the real powerhouses of the phenolic monoterpenes thymol and carvacrol. But it's not just them. We also find significant contributions from compounds like rosmarinic acid, caffeic acid, and a variety of flavonoids, including luteolin and apigenin. What's so compelling about the latest research is that it's allowing us to understand the precise molecular actions of these compounds. Our mission for this deep dive is to dissect how our scientific understanding of thyme is rapidly evolving. We're moving from seeing it merely as a traditional folk remedy to recognizing it as a sophisticated modulator of precise cellular signaling pathways. This positions Thymus vulgaris as a truly valuable source for what some scientists are calling next-generation therapeutic leads, compounds that could, you know, form the basis of future medicines.
That's quite a bold claim for an everyday herb, calling it a source for next-generation therapeutic leads. And you're suggesting this even extends to something as profound and universal as aging itself. How could something as unassuming as thyme possibly influence something as fundamental as our biological clock or the very process of getting older? That's really astounding to me.
It truly is a significant shift in thinking. This research represents, well, a paradigm shift because it moves us from merely treating the diseases that often accompany aging like heart disease or dementia to actually targeting the aging process directly. The ultimate goal isn't just to extend lifespan, but crucially, to extend what we call health span.
Health span, right.
Exactly. That's the period of life we spend in good health, free from chronic disease and disability. Imagine not just adding years to your life, but adding healthy years to your life.
That's the dream, isn't it?
It really is. And the cornerstone evidence for this comes from a remarkable in vivo study conducted on chronologically aged mice. This research, published in a peer-reviewed journal, revealed something quite extraordinary. Mice that were fed a diet supplemented with thyme essential oil, or TEO, exhibited a significantly higher survival rate compared to their age-matched counterparts who were on a control diet.
Higher survival, okay.
But what was the mechanism? Well, this is the really striking part. The most remarkable finding, the one that really caught the scientific community's attention, was that these TEO-fed mice had significantly longer blood telomere lengths.
Telomeres. Those are the caps on the ends of chromosomes.
Precisely. Think of them like the plastic tips on shoelaces that prevent the laces from fraying. Every time a cell divides, these telomeres naturally shorten. This shortening is a fundamental process of cellular aging, and their length is considered a key biomarker of our biological age, you know, distinct from our chronological age.
Right, right. So longer telomeres mean biologically younger in a sense.
Exactly. So the fact that TEO preserved telomere length suggests a systemic, fundamental anti-aging effect at a very deep cellular and genetic level. It's like discovering a natural compound that helps protect our cellular shoelace tips from fraying too quickly. And it's important to note the study was meticulously designed and conducted responsibly. It utilized a TEO dosage of 250 milligrams per kilogram of body weight per day.
Is that a lot, or?
Well, that concentration had already been established to be anti-inflammatory in previous research, and crucially, was far, far below any known toxicity level. For context, the oral LD50, which is the lethal dose for 50% of the subjects, in mice is like 4,000 milligrams per kilogram.
Wow. Okay, so they were well within a safe range.
Absolutely. A wide safety margin in this research.
That's a staggering claim, though, literally protecting our biological clock. What were the most surprising or robust findings from that mouse study that truly sealed this idea for researchers?
I think the robustness came from seeing the effect on telomeres across the whole organism, not just in isolated cells, and then linking that directly to the extended survival. That's a very strong indicator of a systemic effect.
But there are always challenges translating mouse studies to humans, right?
Of course, yes.
Hmm.
That's the immediate challenge. Mice are not humans.
Hmm.
While the biological mechanisms are often conserved, dosages, metabolism, specific responses, they can differ significantly. But the underlying cellular processes they targeted, like telomere shortening and inflammation, are highly conserved across species, including us.
Okay, so speaking of those cellular processes, you mentioned inflammaging earlier. How does time specifically tackle that, this chronic, low-grade inflammation that seems to just silently drive so much of aging?
All right. Inflammaging is a crucial concept here, and it's a major target for anti-aging interventions. It refers to that chronic, low-grade inflammation that gradually accumulates in our bodies as we age. This persistent inflammation isn't like, you know, the acute inflammation you get from an injury. It's more like a simmering fire. And it's driven largely by the accumulation of senescent cells.
Senescent cells.
The zombie cells.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. They're essentially aged, dysfunctional cells that refuse to die. And instead, they secrete harmful, pro-inflammatory molecules.
Yeah.
They don't function properly. And they release these toxic signals that harm neighboring healthy cells.
TEO appears to directly target this whole process. One of its key actions is the downregulation of cellular senescence genes. The research showed a direct impact on the hippocampus.
The memory center in the brain.
Correct, which is unfortunately highly vulnerable to age-related decline and the effects of inflammaging. Gene expression analysis in the TEO-fed mice revealed a significantly lower expression of a pivotal aging-related gene called P16INK4A.
P16, I've heard of that one. It's like a brake on cell division.
Sort of, yes. It acts like a cellular alarm system.
Yeah.
When it's triggered, it tells cells to stop dividing and enter that state of permanent retirement, or senescence. Time seems to quiet that alarm, helping to keep cells younger for longer. Beyond P16INK4A, TEO also significantly lowered the expression of other related genes, CDK4 and CDK6. These are downstream effectors. They're like the instructions P16INK4A gives out. By subtly reprogramming this entire genetic program, TEO appears to actively delay the onset of cellular aging in a crucial part of the brain.
So it's not just slowing down damage. It seems like it's actively influencing the genetic instructions that tell our cells to age. That sounds profound for a simple herb.
It is profound. That's the real wow moment here, moving beyond just addressing symptoms to potentially influencing the root code of aging. And it gets even more fascinating. Beyond that genetic reprogramming, TEO also attenuates what's called the senescence-associated secretory phenotype, or SAP.
The inflammatory signals those zombie cells release.
Precisely. As I mentioned, senescent cells don't just sit there quietly. They actively contribute to systemic aging by releasing this cocktail of pro-inflammatory molecules. This cocktail signaled to other cells, spreading the inflammatory message. TEO was shown to directly counteract this. The mice on the TEO diet had significantly lower gene expression of the pro-inflammatory cytokine IL-6 in the hippocampus, and lower expression of IL-1B in both the liver and the cerebellum.
So hitting multiple organs, not just the brain.
Exactly. It demonstrates a very targeted anti-inflammatory effect across multiple vital organ systems, directly combating the chronic inflammation that underpins so many age-related diseases. This anti-inflammatory activity of TEO was further validated in vitro studies using NIH3T3 cells, which are a type of mouse fibroblast cell line. These cells showed a dose-dependent reduction in inflammatory markers when treated with TEO. And the study authors specifically attribute these profound anti-inflammatory and telomere protecting activities to the monoterpene antioxidants present in TEO, particularly thymol and its precursor, P-cymene.
Okay, so let's piece this together. You're painting a picture of a multi-step protective process.
Yes, exactly. We can form a compelling mechanistic hypothesis for how time extends health span. Think of it as a multi-step cascading protective effect, positioning time as what we call a geroprotector. An agent that targets the root causes of aging rather than just its symptoms. The first step is initial defense. Oxidative stress is a major driver of cellular damage and directly accelerates telomere shortening during aging.
Free radicals, cell rust, that sort of thing.
Right. Time's potent antioxidant compounds like thymol and carvacrol act as a first line of defense. They efficiently scavenge those free radicals, effectively reducing the overall oxidative burden on our cells. This leads to the second step. Telomere protection. By mitigating that oxidative damage, TEO directly protects telomeres from accelerated attrition. We saw objective evidence of this with the longer telomeres measured in the blood of the TEO-fed mice.
Proof in the pudding, so to speak.
Exactly. Indicating a preservation of cellular youthfulness at a fundamental genetic level. Third, we get delayed senescence. Slower telomere shortening means cells take longer to reach the point where they enter replicative senescence. This functional outcome is clearly reflected at the molecular level by the observed downregulation of the senescence-inducing gene P16INK4A and its downstream effectors, CDK4 and CDK6.
So it's suppressing the aging program itself?
It suggests that yes. It seems to be actively suppressing the genetic program that leads to cellular aging, keeping those cellular alarms from ringing too early. Fourth, there's a systemic anti-inflammatory effect. By reducing the accumulation of senescent cells, TEO diminishes the very source of those pro-inflammatory SASP molecules. This results in a measurable decrease in key inflammaging cytokines, like IL-6 and IL-1B, in vital organs like the brain and liver. And finally, this integrated cascade from antioxidant activity to telomere protection, senescence inhibition, and reduced inflammaging culminates in improved health span. We see improved organ function, a lower risk profile for age-related diseases, and ultimately a higher survival rate as observed in that powerful animal model.
So what does this all mean for us? It's not just about living longer, but genuinely living healthier longer, with our bodies and minds performing better. That's quite a promise, and it raises the bar for what we might expect from natural compounds.
Precisely.
It's about enhancing the quality of those extended years, ensuring vitality and resilience throughout life.
It's remarkable how comprehensive its effects are on aging, touching on our fundamental biology. And when we think about the delicate systems most vulnerable to aging, our brains immediately come to mind. Does this geroprotective action extend to our cognitive health? What's fascinating here is that time shows potential in protecting against neurodegenerative diseases and even improving cognitive function. How does it work on such a complex and vital organ?
It truly is multifaceted in its approach to brain health, which is one of the most exciting areas of this research. Time demonstrates potential in protecting the brain from neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, combating general cognitive decline, and even helping with affective disorders like anxiety and depression.
Wow, okay. Where's the strongest evidence?
Well, let's start with Alzheimer's disease and general cognitive decline, as this is where some of the most compelling evidence lies, including, remarkably, human clinical evidence.
Human evidence? That's significant.
It is. A notable study involved university students who were given oral administration of thymus vulgaris leaves. The results showed significant improvements in both prospective memory.
Remembering to do things in the future.
Yes. Like remembering an appointment and retrospective memory, remembering past events or information like recalling facts for an exam. The same study also documented a significant reduction in scores for anxiety and depression, as measured by the Hospital Anxiety and Depression Scale.
In students, that's interesting. So impacting mood and memory.
Exactly. It suggests a direct impact on both cognitive and mood aspects in humans, which is a rare and exciting finding for an herbal intervention. Mechanistically, one key area is the cholinergic system regulation. Many current pharmacotherapies for Alzheimer's disease work by trying to increase the availability of the neurotransmitter acetylcholine in the brain,
which is crucial for learning and memory.
Absolutely. Thyme essential oil has shown efficacy in this area. In a scopolamine-induced amnesia model in zebrafish, a common animal model for studying memory impairment, TEO treatment ameliorated the increase in acetylcholinesterase, or ACE, activity.
ACE breaks down acetylcholine, right? So inhibiting it boosts the signal.
Precisely. By inhibiting AT, TEO effectively increases the levels of this crucial neurotransmitter in the synapse, enhancing its signaling. Mm. Similar cholinergic enhancing effects have been observed in Caenorhabditis elegans models, a type of nematode worm, suggesting this is a conserved mechanism.
Okay, so that's one angle. What else? Alzheimer's involves those amyloid plaques.
Right. Another critical mechanism is countering amyloid beta toxicity. The accumulation of amyloid beta plaques is a central event in Alzheimer's pathology, leading to significant neuronal toxicity and ultimately cell death. An in vitro study using SHSY5Y human neuroblastoma cells directly demonstrated that TEO protects neurons from aggregate-induced damage. The molecular targets here were clearly identified. TEO significantly reduced markers of apoptosis, or programmed cell death.
Stopping the cells from dying off.
Essentially, yes. It reduced cleaved caspase 3, improved the BCL2-Bax protein ratio towards cell survival, and diminished an-induced DNA fragmentation. But it goes a step further. TEO was found to promote the phosphorylation of nuclear factor erythroid 2-related factor 2, or NRF2.
NRF2, that rings a bell. Master antioxidant switch.
You got it. NRF2 is like the master conductor of your cell's internal antioxidant orchestra. When activated, it orchestrates the body's entire endogenous antioxidant response, leading to increased expression of powerful downstream antioxidant enzymes, including hemoxygenase 1 and superoxide dismutase SOD.
So it's not just acting as an antioxidant, it's telling the cells to make more of their own defenses.
Exactly. It demonstrates that thyme initiates a proactive, coordinated cellular defense against the oxidative stress that damages neurons. And finally, in terms of brain repair and plasticity, there's evidence for neurogenesis and synaptic plasticity. In vivo studies in mice have shown that thymol, one of thyme's key compounds, can upregulate brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or BDNF.
BDNF, the brain fertilizer.
That's the one. It's critical for neuron survival, differentiation, and the formation of new synapses, the connections between neurons that allow our brains to learn and store memories. Further in vitro work showed that thymol promotes neurite outgrowth and the maturation of hippocampal neurons. Remarkably, it was even able to rescue chemically induced damage to the neuronal cytoskeleton, specifically microtubules.
So it might actually help rebuild brain circuits.
It suggests a potential role in the physical reconstruction of neuronal circuitry, which is often severely compromised in neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's. Imagine a compound that not only protects existing brain cells, but also encourages the growth of new connections.
That's fascinating. So many different ways it supports brain health, from boosting neurotransmitters to literally helping rebuild neuronal connections and activating our internal antioxidant defenses. But when we talk about something as complex as the brain, are there any particular limitations or areas where the research is still, you know, very preliminary?
That's an important point. While the in vitro and animal data are compelling, human trials, especially large-scale ones, are still limited. That one human study on memory was relatively small. So we're building a strong case. But more human clinical data is always needed for confirmation.
Right, the usual caveat. And what about other conditions like Parkinson's or even mood disorders? Does thyme play a role there too?
That's an important point. While the in vitro and animal data are compelling, human trials, especially large-scale ones, are still limited.
Mm-hmm.
The one human study on memory was relatively small. So we're building a strong case, but more human clinical data is always needed.
Right, the usual caveat. And what about other conditions like Parkinson's or even mood disorders? Does thyme play a role there too?
Yes, its neuroprotective effects certainly seem to extend to models of other conditions, including Parkinson's disease. In an animal model of Parkinson's, which is characterized by the tragic loss of dopamine-producing neuron cells, critical for movement control treatment with carvacrol, was shown to directly protect these dopaminergic neurons from cell death.
Protecting the dopamine cells is key in Parkinson's.
Absolutely. This protective effect was specifically associated with a reduction in reactive astrogliosis, which is a marker of neuroinflammation, and also the modulation of transient receptor potential, or TRP, channels in both neurons and astrocytes. Furthermore, in a rat model of transient global cerebral ischemia, which simulates a stroke, administration of thymus vulgaris extract demonstrated significant neuroprotective activity. Treated animals showed improved motor coordination and balance in tests, and at the biochemical level, the extract significantly reduced brain levels of melandialdehyde, or MDA.
The marker for oxidative damage, the rust.
Exactly. Think of MDA as a measure of cellular rust in the brain after an ischemic event. Now, shifting to affective disorders like anxiety and depression, emerging evidence increasingly links neuroinflammation to their pathophysiology.
Inflammation again, it keeps coming up.
It really does. Given thyme's potent anti-inflammatory properties that we've already touched upon, it's highly relevant here. Its constituents directly target key inflammatory pathways within the central nervous system. This includes NFE-CB inhibition. Thymol and carvacrol have been shown to downregulate the NFEB signaling pathway, which is essentially the central alarm bell for inflammation inside our cells.
Dampening the alarm.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Thymol and carvacrol essentially dampen that alarm, preventing it from ringing too loudly or too often, thereby calming the inflammatory storm. They also inhibit the NLRP3 inflammasome. Thymol can reduce components of this protein complex in microglia, the brain's resident immune cells. The NLRP3 inflammasome is a potent driver of neuroinflammation.
Triggering those strong inflammatory cytokines.
Right. It activates caspase 1, which then leads to the maturation and release of potent pro-inflammatory cytokines like IL-1 and IL-18. Thyme seems to put a damper on that whole process. Additionally, thymus vulgaris shows specific cytokine modulation. It not only suppresses pro-inflammatory cytokines, but also actively enhances the production of anti-inflammatory cytokines, like transforming growth factor beta, TGF-beta, and interleukin-10, IL-10, which are crucial for resolving inflammation. Perhaps most directly relevant to mood disorders is its impact on monoamine neurotransmitter regulation. In a mouse model of chronic unpredictable mild stress, a common model for studying depression final treatment was found to reverse the stress-induced depletion of,
let me guess, serotonin.
Norepinephrine.
You got it. Norepinephrine and serotonin 5-HT in the hippocampus. This is a very significant finding because conventional antidepressant drugs often work by increasing the availability of these very same neurotransmitters in the brain, suggesting a direct antidepressant-like pharmacological action for thymol.
Okay, this raises an important question for me, and I imagine for you listening. How can time affect so many different aspects of the brain, from memory and neurodegeneration to mood? Is it all happening directly inside the brain, or is there a bigger picture, a broader system at play that connects these seemingly disparate effects?
That's an excellent question, and it's where the concept of the gut-brain immune axis becomes crucial for understanding time's widespread benefits. While some of time's compounds may certainly cross the blood-brain barrier and act directly within the brain, a more comprehensive explanation involves its systemic impact on the gut and the immune system.
The gut-brain connection. It's huge in research now.
Absolutely. This creates a powerful, multi-pronged therapeutic action via this interconnected axis. We know that neuroinflammation is a common feature in conditions like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, depression, and ischemic injury. This brain inflammation, driven by activated microglia and astrocytes, the brain's own immune and support cells, is very often exacerbated by systemic inflammation originating from the gut.
Leaky gut, allowing stuff into the bloodstream.
Exactly. When our intestinal barrier is impaired, what's commonly referred to as a leaky gut, bacterial components, such as lipopolysaccharide or LPS, can enter the bloodstream. This triggers a body-wide inflammatory response that, in turn, fuels inflammation in the brain. It's like a signal from a compromised gut sounding an alarm throughout the body, eventually reaching the sensitive brain.
So where does time fit into that picture?
This is where time appears to intervene directly at the source, acting as a crucial modulator. Studies show that thyme extract enhances gut barrier function by upregulating the expression of tight junction proteins like ZO1.
The cement between the gut cells.
Perfect analogy. By strengthening this cement, thyme effectively seals the gaps between intestinal cells. This leads to reduced intestinal permeability, meaning less leakiness, and consequently lower levels of inflammatory endotoxins circulating in the blood. Simultaneously, thyme's bioactive components like thymol and carvacrol directly inhibit key inflammatory signaling hubs, such as NFKY and the NLRP3 inflammasome, not just in the brain, but in immune cells throughout the entire body.
So it's working on multiple fronts, gut, immune system, brain.
Exactly. This integrated action first sealing the gut to reduce the initial source of inflammatory triggers. Second, dampening the peripheral immune response to lower the body's overall inflammatory state. And third, directly inhibiting inflammatory pathways within the central nervous system is likely far more effective than a single target drug acting only in the brain. This holistic modulation of the gut-brain immune axis provides a unified and powerful explanation for time's broad neuroprotective and mood-regulating benefits. It's a prime example of how natural compounds can have systemic, interconnected effects.
That's incredibly insightful. It connects so many dots. What's truly astounding is how the underlying mechanisms we've discussed, like time's anti-inflammatory properties or its ability to modulate cell cycles, aren't limited to aging or brain health. In fact, they lead us to an even more profound and perhaps surprising area of research, its potential role in battling cancer. That feels like a whole new frontier for a common herb. What's the evidence here for time's anti-neoplastic activity?
It is indeed a significant leap. And the research here is evolving rapidly, moving beyond just general observations of toxicity to a much more sophisticated understanding of its ability to target specific oncogenic signaling pathways. At a broad level, thyme essential oil and its primary constituents, thymol and carvacrol, have demonstrated significant cytotoxic, meaning cell killing, and antiproliferative, meaning inhibiting growth, effects against a remarkably wide array of cancer cell lines in vitro studies.
Like which types of cancer?
Oh, quite a range. Various types of colorectal cancer cells, several breast cancer lines, even aggressive triple negative ones, which are notoriously difficult to treat. Oral squamous cell carcinoma, bladder cancer, hepatocellular carcinoma, liver cancer, various hematological malignancies like leukemia and multiple myeloma, and even ovarian cancer cells, including those that have shown resistance to conventional chemotherapy drugs.
That's a lot, a very broad spectrum.
It is impressive. The proposed general mechanism for this broad cytotoxicity involves the lipophilic or fat-loving nature of compounds like thymol. These molecules are thought to easily slip right into the fatty outer layers, the membranes of cancer cells.
So they disrupt the cell membrane.
That's the idea. Cancer cells, particularly, have highly active, often chaotic, cell membranes. Once thymol accumulates there, it disrupts the membrane structure, increasing its permeability. Imagine poking holes in a balloon. This disruption leads to the leakage of essential enzymes and metabolites from inside the cancer cell, effectively causing its death from within.
So it's not just generally harmful to cells, but specifically targets cancer. Are there particular pathways it influences, like we saw with the brain, or is it more of a broad stroke attack?
Absolutely. It's far more sophisticated than just a general attack. Beyond that general membrane disruption, recent research has identified several specific and absolutely critical cancer-driving pathways that are profoundly modulated by TIME's components. This indicates a targeted approach.
Okay, like what?
One of the most significant and specific findings relates to the Wnt-catenin pathway in colorectal cancer. This pathway is aberrantly activated, meaning it's switched on incorrectly and constantly in approximately 90% of colorectal cancers.
90%, so it's a huge driver.
Exactly, making it a prime therapeutic target because it drives uncontrolled growth. A 2020 study specifically demonstrated that thymol directly inhibits the Wnt-catenin pathway. The mechanism involves preventing the accumulation of vitcatenin, a key protein in this pathway that, when unchecked, signals cells to proliferate. This, in turn, suppresses the transcription of its downstream target genes.
The cancer-promoting genes.
Yes, including the key oncogens, c-MYC and cyclin D1. These are well-known drivers of cell proliferation and tumor growth. This targeted inhibition resulted in decreased colorectal cancer cell proliferation, reduced migration, lessened invasion, and even inhibited epithelial mesenchymal transition, or EMT.
EMT, that's when cancer cells get aggressive and spread, metastasis.
Correct. And what's more, this effect was validated in vivo. Oral administration of thymol at dosages of 75 and 150 milligrams per kilogram significantly decreased tumor volume and lung metastasis in a mouse xenograft model.
Wow, in vivo validation too. That's strong.
It's very strong evidence of a targeted anti-cancer effect, impacting the fundamental processes of cancer progression. Another fascinating area is its impact on interferon and glycan and ERK5 signaling in head and neck cancer. A microarray analysis on UMSCC1 head and neck cancer cells treated with TEO provided a broader view of its molecular impact. The three most significantly regulated signaling pathways were identified as interferon signaling and glycan biosynthesis and ERK5 signaling.
Okay, how does hitting those help?
Well, the anti-cancer effect appears to be driven by a combination of actions. Downregulation of critical cell cycle genes like UBE2C and CDC20, which cancer cells need to divide, and upregulation of the gene OAS2, part of the interferon pathway involved in controlling cell growth. It's also thought that interfering with N-glycan biosynthesis might stop cancer growth by messing with crucial growth factor receptors that cancer cells hijack. And modulating the ERK5 pathway could exert anti-angiogenic effects.
Cutting off the tumor's blood supply.
Potentially, yes. Preventing the formation of new blood vessels tumors need to grow. Furthermore, a systematic review of the literature confirms that both carvacrol and thymol exert their anti-proliferative effects, in part by inhibiting the PI3K, KTM-TOR, and MABK signaling pathways.
Those are huge pathways in cancer, right? Like master control switches.
Exactly. They govern cell growth, proliferation, survival, metabolism. And they are very frequently hyperactivated in many different types of cancer, giving cancer cells a constant go signal. TIME seems to disrupt these signals.
So it's hitting multiple key cancer pathways.
It appears so. And beyond inhibiting these growth pathways, TIME also seems capable of inducing multiple forms of programmed cell death in cancer cells.
Not just one way to kill them.
Right, which is a very important strategy because it can help overcome cancer cell resistance to a single death mechanism, a major challenge in chemotherapy. Evidence supports the induction of not only apoptosis, controlled cell suicide, via caspase activation and modulating BaCC-BCL2, but also autophagy, cells eating themselves, and even for apoptosis, an iron-dependent form of cell death observed in leukemia and multiple myeloma cells.
Multimodal attack. Makes it harder for the cancer to escape.
That's the idea. It presents cancer cells with multiple ways to be eliminated.
This sounds almost too good to be true, showing such specific and potent effects against cancer. Are there any complexities or even paradoxical findings in this research that we should be aware of, given the aggressive nature of cancer?
That's a very astute question, and Yes, there is a critical and somewhat paradoxical finding that highlights the complexity of natural compounds, especially when it comes to dosage. A surprising observation emerged from that same study on UMSCC1 head and neck cancer cells. While high concentrations of TEO were indeed potently cytotoxic, leading to cancer cell death. Get this.
Uh-oh.
Such toxic concentrations were found to stimulate cancer cell proliferation and viability.
That's the opposite effect.
Exactly. This is what's known as a biphasic or hormetic dose response effect. It means that a substance can have one effect at low doses, in this case stimulating growth, and the opposite effect at high doses, inhibiting growth or causing death.
Is that common?
It's not unique to thyme. It has actually been observed with other cytotoxic agents, including standard chemotherapies like doxorubicin. This finding is incredibly important because it emphasizes the vital importance of precise dosage in any potential therapeutic applications, particularly when dealing with serious conditions like cancer.
Right. More is not always better, and sometimes less is actually worse.
Precisely. It suggests that the concentration of the bioactive compounds is crucial for achieving the desired anti-cancer effect without inadvertently promoting harm. It underscores why careful research and standardization are so essential before any clinical application.
That's a fascinating and important nuance that really highlights the complexity. Okay, it seems like thyme has a hand in so many complex systems. Let's shift gears now to metabolic health areas like obesity, cholesterol, blood sugar regulation. What has this deep dive revealed about thyme's potential here? Given its broad impact, I'm curious if it offers a systemic approach to issues that often plague modern health.
It's true. Its systemic impact is remarkable, and this is another area where thyme is emerging as a very promising agent for combating metabolic syndrome, that cluster of conditions including obesity, dyslipidemia, insulin resistance, and hypertension. Its effects appear to be multisystemic.
Hitting all the major components of metabolic syndrome.
It seems so, involving adipose tissue, the liver, the gut, the cardiovascular system, indicating a truly holistic approach, beginning with anti-obesity and adipose tissue regulation. In preclinical models of diet-induced obesity, specifically high-fat diet, HFD, fed mice and rats, oral administration of thyme leaf extract, or TLE, resulted in significantly decreased body weight gain, lower body fat percentage, and reduced white adipose tissue weight.
Did they just eat less?
That's the interesting part. These effects were observed without affecting the overall food consumption of the animals. This suggests a direct metabolic impact, maybe influencing metabolism or fat storage, not just appetite. A similar study in obese rats using a high dose of Thymus vulgaris seed extract also showed substantial reductions in body weight, BMI, and waist circumference.
Okay, so potential anti-obesity effects. What about cholesterol?
Yes, consistent beneficial effects on lipid profile modulation, combating dyslipidemia across different animal models. In one study on fattening pigs, incorporating just 3% thyme into their diet lowered total cholesterol levels in both blood and muscle. In alloxin-induced diabetic rats, thyme oil significantly decreased serum levels of total cholesterol, triglycerides, LDL, bad cholesterol, and VLDL.
And the good cholesterol, HDL.
Crucially, it concurrently increased levels of HDL, the good cholesterol. Similar positive effects were seen in other HFD obese rat and mouse models.
How does it do that?
The proposed mechanism is linked to the antioxidant properties of thyme's flavonoids and phenolic compounds. By inhibiting lipid peroxidation, they might reduce harmful oxidized LDL and also potentially inhibit key enzymes involved in cholesterol synthesis.
Directly impacting cholesterol production.
Got it.
Now, the big one for metabolic health, blood sugar and diabetes.
Right. Moving on to glucose homeostasis and anti-diabetic effects. Multiple studies using streptozotocin, STZ, induced diabetic rat models have shown that thyme extracts significantly improve blood glucose control. In some cases, these effects were comparable to the conventional anti-diabetic drug, glibenclamide.
Comparable to a prescription drug? That's impressive.
It is. Furthermore, in obese rats, thyme extract was shown to significantly improve insulin sensitivity and reduce insulin resistance.
Tackling insulin resistance is key for type 2 diabetes.
Absolutely. The proposed mechanisms are multifaceted. They could involve boosting glucose clearance, reducing glucose absorption from the gut, or even directly stimulating glucose utilization in peripheral tissues.
Helping cells use sugar better? Okay. And the liver? Metabolic syndrome often involves fatty liver.
Good point. Regarding hepatoprotective effects, metabolic syndrome is very strongly associated with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, or NAFLD. Thyme has shown clear protective effects on the liver in this context. In diabetic rats, thyme extract reduced elevated levels of liver enzymes like AST, ALT, and ALP, which are common markers of liver damage. It also protected the liver from adverse histological changes associated with obesity. Mechanistically, this was linked to thyme's ability to reduce pro-apoptotic genes, like caspase-3-9, while increasing the anti-apoptotic gene BCL-2 in liver tissue.
Protecting liver cells from dying.
Essentially, yes. Preserving liver function under metabolic stress.
These are impressive, widespread effects across so many different metabolic pathways, from fat storage to cholesterol and blood sugar. It's almost like it's addressing the whole metabolic syndrome at once. What's the underlying reason it can impact so many metabolic functions simultaneously? Is there a central hub that thyme is influencing?
That's the crux of it. And recent research has uncovered some truly novel mechanisms that connect these dots, suggesting a central unifying mechanism. One significant finding is related to ACE inhibition. Rosmarinic acid, a key phenolic acid in thyme, has been shown to directly inhibit angiotensin-converting enzyme, or ACE.
ACE inhibitors.
Right.
Those are blood pressure drugs.
Exactly. This mechanism provides a clear molecular basis for the traditional use of thyme for high blood pressure and its observed blood pressure lowering effects in animal models.
Okay, that explains the blood pressure part, but the broader metabolic picture.
Well, perhaps the most pivotal finding and what ties many of these metabolic benefits together is its impact on gut barrier integrity and metabolite modulation. This comes back to the gut again.
Ah, the gut connection strikes again.
It really does seem central. In those high-fat, diet-fed mouse models, thyme leaf extract demonstrably improved gut barrier function. It did this by increasing the expression of tight junction proteins like ZO1.
Strengthening the seals between gut cells.
Precisely. This led to a significant reduction in intestinal permeability.
Right.
Less leakiness, normalized colon pH, and significantly reduced the circulating levels of inflammatory bacterial endotoxins, like LPS, in the bloodstream.
Cutting down on those inflammatory molecules getting out of the gut.
Exactly. Beyond that, TLE also beneficially altered the fecal metabolite profile, increasing levels of things like 2-hydroxypalmitic acid and 3-indoleacrylic acid, which were depleted by the high-fat diet and play roles in gut health and metabolism. This evidence strongly indicates that the gut is indeed a primary nexus for thyme's metabolic benefits.
So fixing the gut helps fix the metabolism system-wide.
It appears that way. Its ability to restore gut barrier integrity and beneficially modulate the gut environment seems to be a central upstream mechanism. We know a high-fat diet disrupts gut microbiota, increases permeability, leading to metabolic endotoxemia. Those inflammatory molecules entering the bloodstream, driving insulin resistance, liver fat, systemic inflammation. Thyme appears to intervene directly at this critical source. By strengthening the physical gut barrier, reducing local inflammation, and lowering endotoxin entry, it mitigates the chronic inflammatory and metabolic burden on the rest of the body.
So the upstream action leads to all those downstream benefits we talked about.
That's the conclusion. This positions thyme not merely as an anti-diabetic or cholesterol-lowering agent, but more fundamentally as a gut barrier restorative agent, whose broad metabolic benefits stem from this primary action on the gut.
That's a powerful unifying theory explaining how it can have such widespread effects. It's like it's fixing the foundation, not just the leaky roof. We've heard a lot about thyme's anti-inflammatory role in aging and brain health. But does it have direct, specific effects on our immune system and inflammation broadly beyond those specific contexts? I'm curious if it's just generally calming or if it exhibits more nuanced control.
Absolutely, it exhibits nuanced control. Beyond its general antioxidant capacity, which certainly helps, thyme exerts very precise and sophisticated control over the immune system, specifically targeting key molecular hubs of inflammation throughout the body. It demonstrates a fascinating dual-action immunomodulatory effect.
Dual-action meaning?
Meaning it's capable of both suppressing inflammatory responses when they're excessive and actively promoting their resolution when they need to wind down. It's about balance. Specifically, TEO and its main components, thymol and carvacrol, potently inhibit the synthesis and release of key pro-inflammatory cytokines. These are the signaling molecules telling immune cells to ramp up inflammation.
Like TNF-alpha, IL-6, those guys.
Yeah. Exactly. Tumor necrosis factor alpha, TNF-α, interleukin-6, IL-6, interleukin-8, IL-8, and interleukin-1, IL-1. This inhibition occurs at both the mRNA and protein levels, indicating a comprehensive shutdown of the inflammatory signal. Concurrently, and just as importantly for resolving inflammation, thyme actively promotes the production of anti-inflammatory cytokines like transforming growth factor beta, TGF-β, and interleukin-10, IL-10.
So it puts the brakes on inflammation, but also helps clean up afterwards.
Precisely. These anti-inflammatory cytokines are crucial for dampening responses, preventing excessive tissue damage, and promoting tissue repair, creating a balanced and adaptive immune response, not just a suppressed one. This dual modulation is achieved by targeting upstream signaling pathways. For example, thymol and carvacrol directly downregulate the activation of the NFPD signaling pathway.
The master inflammation switch again?
Right. Demonstrated in macrophages and human peritoneal cells, reducing phosphorylation of key components, preventing NFP from activating inflammatory genes. TIME's components also modulate the activity of the cyclooxygenase 2, COX2 enzyme.
COX2, like NSAIDs, ibuprofen.
Yes, the same molecular target as many common NSAIDs, highlighting a similar mechanism for pain and inflammation relief. And as we discussed in neuroprotection, thymol can inhibit the NLRP3 inflammasome, that critical sensor driving potent inflammatory responses like IL-1 and IL-18 release.
So it's not just reducing inflammation generally, but actively rebalancing the immune response. That's a more sophisticated mechanism. Has this sophisticated immune modulation been seen in humans, particularly for common inflammatory conditions like, say, respiratory issues, where inflammation is often front and center?
Yes, these potent anti-inflammatory and immunomodulatory actions have indeed been tested in clinical settings, particularly for respiratory conditions. For asthma, a randomized triple-blind placebo-controlled clinical trial in 60 children, ages 5-12, with asthma exacerbations was conducted. The group receiving a thyme syrup alongside standard care showed a statistically significant reduction in activity-induced cough compared to the placebo group.
Cough is a big symptom in asthma. What else?
They also showed a significant improvement in forced expiratory volume in 1 second, FEV1, a key measure of lung function.
Better airflow.
Right. While no significant differences were seen in wheezing or shortness of breath in that particular study, the positive effects on cough and FEV1 are certainly clinically relevant outcomes for asthma management. In the case of bronchitis and productive cough, an open, multicenter observational study involving 154 children reported an impressive improvement in cough intensity in 93.5% of patients treated with thyme syrup for 7 to 14 days.
93.5%, that's huge.
It suggests broad effectiveness in a real-world setting. And another randomized, double-blind study in adults with productive cough found thyme syrup to be as effective as the conventional mucolytic drug bromhexine in alleviating symptoms.
As effective as a standard drug for cough, that's really practical.
It highlights its potential value as an alternative or complementary therapy for common inflammatory respiratory conditions.
That's a very practical application. Are there any specific factors that affect how well thyme works or its potency? Does the way it's prepared or harvested impact its chemical makeup and thus its effects?
That's a crucial point, and it's where the art and science of herbal medicine truly meet. The efficacy isn't solely attributable to thymol. The complex interplay between dozens of compounds within the essential oil is absolutely crucial. Its synergy, the whole being greater than the sum of its parts.
So the whole oil is important, not just isolated bits.
Exactly. And what's fascinating is that this chemical profile, and thus its efficacy, can change dramatically depending on the plant's developmental stage or its phenophase.
Phenophase, like when it flowers.
Precisely. There was a key study that directly compared two thyme essential oils, one from thyme at the beginning of its flowering period and another from the end. When these were tested on LPS-activated macrophages, those stimulated inflammatory immune cells, only the TEO from the beginning of the flowering period acted as a potent inhibitor of the pro-inflammatory cytokines like IL-6, IL-8, IL-1, and TNFA.
Only the early flowering one worked.
In that study, yes. The TEO from the late flowering period was largely ineffective, despite also containing thymol.
Wow, the timing is everything.
It really highlights the crucial impact of the plant's developmental stage when it's harvested on its overall chemical profile and, consequently, its therapeutic efficacy. This underscores the need for careful sourcing and standardization if we're to truly harness thyme's full medicinal potential consistently and reliably. It's not just about having the right plant, but the right plant at the right time.
We've just completed an astounding deep dive into Thymus vulgaris. I mean, from simply being a flavorful addition to our meals, we've uncovered its potential to extend health span by protecting telomeres and combating inflammaging. We've seen its multifaceted neuroprotective capabilities, enhancing cognitive function, maybe even offering hope against neurodegenerative and affective disorders by modulating that intricate gut-brain immune axis. And then there's its surprising targeted anti-neoplastic activity disrupting cancer cell proliferation through specific molecular pathways. We have even touched upon its systemic impact on cardiometabolic health, regulating obesity, lipids, improving glucose control, often by fundamentally restoring gut barrier function. This isn't just traditional lore, it's serious science uncovering profound molecular mechanisms that truly shift our understanding of this humble herb.
Exactly. We've truly extracted the most important nuggets of knowledge today, providing you, our listener, with a shortcut to being remarkably well-informed about this incredible plant. Thyme's journey from kitchen staple to a source of next-generation therapeutic leads is a testament to its powerful bioactivity and the depth of scientific inquiry now being applied to natural compounds.
It really does change how you look at a simple herb that sits in your spice rack. But here's where it gets really interesting and raises an important question for you, our listener, to consider after this deep dive.
What's fascinating here is how this vast scientific promise of Thymus vulgaris and its specific compounds like Simol and Carvacrol, all this robust research we've discussed today, how it often clashes with our established systems for what we call medicine.
Clashes how?
Well, the current U.S. regulatory framework, primarily the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, or DSHEA, of 1994, categorizes most herbal products like thyme as dietary supplements.
Supplements.
Okay, not drugs. Right. This means they are regulated as a category of food, not pharmaceutical drugs. And this has significant implications. They do not undergo the same rigorous pre-market FDA approval process for safety and efficacy as pharmaceutical drugs.
So they don't have to prove they work in the same way a drug does before being sold.
Correct. Consequently, manufacturers cannot claim that their products can prevent, diagnose, treat, or cure diseases. And they have to include that disclaimer you always see. This statement has not been evaluated by the FDA.
This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Yeah, we all know that one.
Exactly. So this legal and economic framework, rather than necessarily an inherent lack of scientific inquiry or safety in the plant itself, this framework is what leads to an interesting situation. You have potentially beneficial natural compounds, despite the robust research we've detailed today, that may not receive official recognition as medicine in the same way as patented drugs.
Because they're regulated like food, even if the science suggests they act like medicine.
Precisely. It raises a compelling question about how we define and integrate powerful natural compounds into our healthcare system, despite compelling scientific evidence. It truly makes you wonder about the future of medicine and the path natural compounds might take within these structures. Something to think about.